B-Pod Studios.
Welcome to Wrestling Inside the Ropes with James Stewart.
I'm the best. I'm the best in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day.
And Mike Sarge Riley.
I don't know if you realize it or not, but you're trespassing on private property. When you walk through here, through these ropes, you're in my yard. Bad things happen in my yard.
Wrestling Inside the Ropes.
Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 98.5thesportshub.com and on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. Mike, a lot of wrestling to cover in the last week or so, lot. But I want to simplify it into our biggest takeaways from the last week. And I want to start with, Mike, I think we know our main event for WrestleMania in Tampa.
Let me get your take, because I have mine, too, if you want it.
I think it's going to be Brock Lesnar in his final match against ESPN ESPY Award winner Roman Reigns.
Ding, ding, ding. Yep.
So here's why I feel this way. Vince McMahon is a Brock Lesnar guy. Paul Heyman is a Brock Lesnar guy. So now, both of the top people in creative, the ones who really matter, are fans of Brock Lesnar. So it was only a matter of time before he was going to be Universal Champion. And I tend to believe, Mike, WWE paid ESPN to have a WWE ESPY Award.
Agreed.
And that Roman Reigns was going to win it. And here's why I think that is. WWE put out a poll with Roman and Becky Lynch on the same poll. And Roman won it, which I have a difficult time believing, because Becky Lynch is just, she's your number one star, and she's over with the internet crowd too. So in my mind, Becky Lynch wins that vote and should have won that award.
She should have, but also I think what WWE is doing, and I think that's what they're going to make us to begin to believe here with the Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns hypothetical matchup we're talking about at WrestleMania 36, is that Roman Reigns did overcome cancer. And, you know, he has become kind of like that, I don't know, figure guy to say that I can overcome stuff. And also, he's so over with the crowd right now. He really is. I mean, I think he is, at least. I thought he's the loudest chant that I've seen heard in a long time. From what I saw on Raw, even at Extreme Rules, sure, your tag team with The Undertaker, that definitely helps. But it's just like you kind of have to ride that hot hand, because for a long time, as we know, he was being booed out of the building. And now they kind of are on his side. So I'm with you. Two top talents here. I thought the same thing this week. I'm like, this is only a matter of time before this storyline begins to progress. Roman versus Brock.
And Mike, I think the response has been better for Roman, but I don't think it's 100%. It's probably, if it was 50-50 before, it's probably closer to 70-30, or even if on a good night, it's 80-20.
Yeah, it sounds right.
But as we all know, this is card subject to change, because last year I had a pretty good vibe that it was Charlotte Flair and Ronda Rousey in the main event of WrestleMania in New York. That changed to a three-way when Becky Lynch got hot. And I feel like in the mind of fairness, because I am fair and objective, I'm really not. I should mention that on the Brock cash-in that the official that Heyman brought down should be fired. He never allowed Seth Rollins to get to his feet, and I am very outraged over this. As you can tell in the tone of my voice, I am very outraged. But for consistency, I should bring it up. I am overly outraged. I am angry. Seth Rollins got screwed, and now I've expressed my outrage. As far as Seth Rollins goes, I don't think he's winning at SummerSlam, because he won at WrestleMania in New York, but it really wasn't convincing. And I wonder if we would look differently on Seth Rollins' Universal Championship run if AJ Styles had been healthy and didn't get injured during the Money in the Bank match, and he had been able to go full villain in a main event program, multiple multiple matches of AJ versus Rollins are probably better than anything he's done with Baron Corbin.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a crime. It's a crime in this way, more so than the Brock cash-in, which I'm outraged at because the official should have let Seth Rollins get to his feet. There, I'm outraged.
Yeah. It's
kind of a crime because Seth did as much as he could with the creative that he was given.
True. And, you know, before, I don't think anybody saw Brock Lesnar coming back as soon as he did. But, you know, when I think of WrestleMania 35, and let me ask you, Jimmy, when I say WrestleMania 35, what moment comes right to the top of your mind? Go ahead.
Kofi winning the championship against Daniel Bryan.
I was going to say that. And then I would also say Becky and, I don't know, for some reason, I got the Shane McMahon Miz match in my mind, too, for some reason with that, the high pedestal there, the ladder, whatever the heck they were on.
The camera well.
Camera well, thank you. Yeah, just those are like my top three moments. Seth Rollins is not in the top moment, I don't think, for a lot of people. Yes, it was the first match of the night. It's unforgettable. And you know what? I think it is best for business here for the WWE as Brock Lesnar as the Universal Champion. He's a draw. Whether you like him or not, you're invested in the character, and that is what the company wants you to have here with Brock Lesnar. I am a huge... I'm a big fan of this. I love how he is the Universal Champion, whether you like it or not. And it's great, to quote you, how Twitter can explode sometimes when he does become champion.
It's fun that way, Mike. You watch awesome. Brock Lesnar because people are legitimately interested in how he operates.
Yeah.
Every movement that he does. And it was only a matter of time before he was going to get the Universal Championship back.
Of course.
And especially when they made Paul Heyman the creative director, because he's a legitimate advocate for Brock Lesnar.
Yep.
And the ESPN thing just jumped out at me because they have been downplaying Roman's role on television lately, even though he's doing Raw and SmackDown.
Right.
TV-wise, he is still the face of that company, and the ESPN award that he got, whether they paid for it or not, and I think they did, that was really a moment where, yep, he's still the face of the company, even if he's not in a main event program for the championship.
Right.
And
right.
So they are long playing Roman Reigns.
Absolutely. And, you know, it was so obvious. Like, come on. He wasn't even on stage, too. Like, everybody else, all the big name guys were on stage getting awards. Patrick Mahomes. I know Kobe Bryant had the lifetime one for Bill Russell. You know, the St. Louis Blues. Whoever's up there, all that stuff. The women's soccer team. Everyone is there, but they have this outside. They weren't even in the, where was it, the Kodak Theater in Hollywood? They were outdoors, and it was just so predetermined. And yeah, it's got writing on the wall that, hey, ESPN, we got to help the ratings here. We do have a big deal coming on with Fox, so help us out with our superstar who we have as the guy of our company, and it's Roman Reigns, whether you like it or not, fans.
And he's a favorite of ESPN because he does the interviews, he does their college football game day, so they're like, of course we'll help out. And plus, absolutely, I'm sure that WWE paid a pretty penny, because if they really wanted to, Mike, they could buy the world. And they're showing
without question. Absolutely. Yep.
They're showing that. What was your number one takeaway from the last week of wrestling, Mike?
I mean, there was so much that happened. I mean, you know, I had the AEW stuff in there, too.
Yeah, chat me up. What's your leadoff thought on AEW?
Okay, so, I mean, it's, you know, very tough to top the Double or Nothing from May. Fighter Fest was good 2 weeks ago. This is still a good show a couple of nights ago. Fight for the Fallen in Jacksonville, sure, in the headquarters city of AEW. And, you know, I thought that it was an overall good show. The problem is, from what I saw with the crowd...
Wait a minute, Mike. You're doing a negative on AEW? This is blasphemous. You cannot do this.
The only negative I saw from the crowd was at the main event. I thought that they weren't into it as much as all of the other matches. Maybe because there was so much action and so much to be engaged with. You know, the Young Bucks and Cody and Dustin, I know they did the best they could, and But I just think people were kind of burnt out. And it's hard when you have, you don't have the crowd 100% invested in you. So I guess like the word underachieved would fit this, you know, definition of the match.
Oh, I love that you're going negative on AEW. Good job by you. Good job.
What I will tell you is
I think maybe it's because the crowd liked all four competitors.
Right. It's hard. That's
and
a tough
so
one.
When you don't have a clear side to pick, you're not a fan, you're a spectator, and there's a little less emotion in it, unless right. it is just so off the charts good. And while it was good, I kind of expected great to excellent to, I don't want to say perfect because it's not that, it's not perfect, but I mean, Cody's kind of overrated as a worker. I know that people hate when people bash Cody, but
I saw a bad Kenny Omega match
and Cody Rhodes was involved with it.
Yeah, I'll give you. Okay, yeah, I hear you. Well, I think the Young Bucks are overrated.
And,
so.
and if you're ranking the workers in the ring, it's Dustin Rhodes 1, the Young Bucks 2 and 3, and Cody 4.
Right, exactly.
But you know, Cody thinks he's this great worker, and I'm the best wrestler in the world, and I'm this great worker, and blah 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 blah. You're not. It's okay. Yeah. You're not. You're a really good businessman. You're smart. You know how to work the people who make the finances. You know how to work the fans. It's okay. You don't have to be the best wrestler in the world. You don't have to be. It's okay. We'll live. We don't need your speeches before the show. We don't need your speeches after the show. You're not Paul Heyman in ECW just doing this whole rally thing. You're not. We don't need it from you. The throne thing was cute on pay-per-view. That was neat. That was a good thing. But we don't. It's not about you, Cody. It's about the company. And as far as the vice presidents go, I know that you weren't originally a vice president. You kind of weaseled you and Brandy into getting that spot. But out of the group of vice presidents, you're fourth. It's as far as workers go, it's Kenny Omega. It's the Young Bucks 2 and 3. And it's Cody 4. That's how it is. I'm not sorry. It's what it is.
Wow. Geez, very, you're not holding back any punches there on Cody Rhodes. But hey, listen.
And I like Cody. Like I get along with Cody.
But, yeah, I know.
You know that's what it is.
He'll say it like it is, but you know what? I will say this, though, for AEW, to their credit, when Tony Khan made it very clear that the tag team division is going to be emphasized, your main event is a tag team match. And sure, they did bill that from the Double or Nothing pay-per-view, but the fact that it is a main event, I think that does set up the long term here for the future of AEW being heavy tag team division.
And kind of transitioning, I don't know if you have any more takeaways or if you just want to leave it on the negative AEW takeaway.
Well, I mean, just for a positive, I mean, I'm a big Hangman fan. I just love
what
he does.
He's great. He's fabulous.
Awesome. Oh, my God. I can't wait. Cannot wait for the Chicago show with him and, you know, and Jericho and Jon Moxley, who was not on the show, by the way. Who was not on the
No, he's over in New Japan trying to win G1 tournaments.
Right, which I think he will. So that was my pick. But
Booger's my pick.
All right, that's a fair one. That's fair. So I
that
thought
went right over your head.
What did you say?
I said Booger is my pick.
Whoop! I got it.
Which is an old Bobby Heenan line, of course, picking your nose with boogers. But that's a whole nother story.
Disgusting. Or Bastion. So I'm invested in him too. But AEW, solid show. It was a good one.
Yeah. Good one. Free.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Be all good. All roads lead to All Out.
Yep.
In Chicago, which StarCast just announced CM Punk is going to have a live microphone there, which will be really cool.
Huge. Going to be huge.
But he's not wrestling because, remember, StarCast and AEW aren't associated together.
Ish.
Even though Cody and Conrad do business together, which
they're boys.
You know, it's little suspect. But they're not affiliated at all. So, Mike, my number two item relates to a bigger picture WWE thing. And that is, this is now, WWE is now 100% a television show, first and foremost. I think it's been that way for a while, but it's just more and more becoming obvious, at least to me. And to a degree, maybe they should go to studio wrestling. Remember Disney?
Oh, yeah.
Or WCW? They won't, because Raw and SmackDown still draw income and a good gate and fans attending, which they can use the videos for advertisers. And there's more of a business element to all of it.
Right.
But there seems to be this thing about WWE superstars who aren't happy with the reaction that they're getting. And this was evident on Monday Night Raw, where Natty won a four-way match to become the number one challenger to Becky Lynch at SummerSlam. And get this, Mike, it's in Toronto. That's Toronto, Ontario, Canada, which Becky Lynch, who is your biggest star, is going to get booed because Natty Neidhart is, guess what, a member of the Hart family, which, oh, by the way, is from Canada.
Right.
So that's kind of an issue when you have Natty Neidhart, who I think is supposed to be a villain in this case, against your number one hottest female wrestler who just beat Ronda Rousey and has been in kind of mediocre storylines for a little bit now.
Right.
I mean, is this really kind of a direction that you want to go? And I'm all for Natty Neidhart winning, because she cut a great promo. She might be the best in-ring female that is under-promoted.
Yep.
Bell-to-bell female, she's fabulous. Her promos are good. She's not as, quote, over with the crowd as she probably should be. But just positioning her against Becky is a little odd to me. And I'll get into the bigger picture TV thing, but I just want your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I thought it was... God, who else was in that match there?
It was Alexa Bliss.
Yeah, there you go. That's who I thought it was going to be.
Alexa Bliss was the one who complained online about it, by the way.
Yes, she did, with the crowd there and being rude and all that. I thought it would have been Alexa Bliss. And watching that match, I'm like, okay, this is perfect, because you could have Alexa Bliss, you know, potentially beat Becky at SummerSlam, or, you know, have her get screwed out of it by Nikki Cross out there, and her friend, and then those two could feud, one of them turn face or whatnot. So that was in the back of my mind. But the Natty one was interesting. And what was awesome, I thought, was at the end, because Natty's promo on Becky was really... it was some good stuff. And it just, like, seeing them turn down the rating more or less, and letting them go more real and use some language that we're not going to use here in this podcast. I thought it's really intriguing too. So I like that. I do like how Natty is going up against Becky. She deserves a push. I've been a Natty advocate for a while. I thought she was going to maybe think about retirement over the last year or so, and then, you know, kind of go off with the championship. So, I don't know. This could be the beginning of the end for her. I don't know. But I'm glad that she's getting that opportunity to be in a main event status with Becky Lynch for the title. And, of course, they're going to build up that, yeah, my home country of Canada, which she did say. And I think it's good. It's a good thing there. And Becky, though, thank God. Just try to get her away from the Seth Rollins thing, please. I know I went on my rant about that last week. So anything to keep her away from the love angle that they have there and make her a badass again, I would be more than fine with that.
Of course, Mike's rant is available in the archives at somethingtowrestlewith.com.
July 10th.
The 98.5 The Sports Hub app, WrestleCast, Wrestling Inside the Ropes.
You do a great impersonation.
I don't. I really don't.
It's not bad. It's not bad.
It's mediocre at best.
All right. I like it, though. I like
that's
the
being
delivery.
Polite. So the bigger picture TV thing that I wanted to get to is I was alerted to a Meltzer podcast, which has since hit the Twitterverse. And Mike, do you remember the Lex Express?
Oh, sure. 25 years ago.
Yes. So according to the Meltzer podcast originally, and it's been a bunch of different places on Twitterverse and the internet, Fox had a meeting relating to SmackDown. So get this. Fox wants WWE to send different wrestlers with Lex Express-like buses to different towns to promote the move of SmackDown to Fox in October, which I find interesting and very old school, and I actually kind of like it.
Yeah.
Because I always liked the Lex Express. I was trying to get it. If you go to the WWE Network, they have 4 hours of Lex Express footage, including them traveling through Massachusetts, which I remember as a Ute, two Utes. I remember as a Ute trying to find out where they were going to stop and trying to make the appropriate accommodations to get and meet Lex Luger, who was being pushed as the top star at the time. And of course, I was like, Lex Luger, future world champion in WWF. It has to happen. Like, I love Lex Luger. I'm a kid. I'm submissive to the WWE experience, and what they tell me is good and bad is bad. And of course, now I'm an adult and it's different.
Yeah.
So I want to find out where these buses are going, because I want to go find one of these Fox buses and I want to, you know, schmooze it up with whoever the WWE star that is that has to be coming to Boston, right? Because
sure,
they have to have a bus come to Boston.
Well, hopefully. And yeah.
I mean, you have wrestler buses who come through here when they come through the towns, and I won't tell you whose bus was coming through town recently, but you know, wrestlers still have buses.
Yep.
More than I think even we know.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least the educated internet fan knows.
Well, but John Cena was huge with it. We know that. He was 100%.
And there are other top stars who have their own buses, and they're,
I can tell you, we'll talk off the air who was this week. Yeah.
Oh, no, we both know who it is, because we both had the same conversation with the same person about the bus.
Yep. There you go. Ding, ding, ding. Okay. We'll leave it at that.
So I like the idea that they're doing this kind of ground sweeping campaign for Fox.
Right.
Is they're trying to get people out there to notice who these people are and why they're important and where SmackDown is going. Friday nights on Fox starting in October.
Right.
So I like what they're doing. Also, according to Meltzer, Fox is going to do a digital promotional video. He had a fancy term. It's basically a digital blast, which this I don't like. The idea is you're going to smarten up fans to wrestling terms. And Dave specifically said in the podcast that it was insider terms. And
really?
That's a little too far from my liking,
right?
Because I can't imagine that Fox or WWE, and especially WWE, would want to do that.
Right.
Because, and I had this conversation with Matt Taven. I don't remember if it was on the air or off the air. But one of the problems right now is wrestling has the hardcores. They'll always have the hardcores. And there's an issue about whether the hardcores are diminishing because they're running out of money, they're bored with the product, or they're hate watching. That's a whole nother debate for another podcast that I just don't have time for right now.
No, of course.
But one of the conversations Matt and I were having was about how the casual fan goes to a show,
yep,
and the hardcore fan is sitting next to them and is alienating them because they're at their first show. And they're not up to speed with everything. So, for example, you could be there because you saw Bayley's color scheme, and your 7-year-old is like, "Oh my God, I like Bayley. She's full of color. She's full of personality. She hugs everybody. I want to go see Bayley." So, the two parents go, the kid goes, but they're not up to speed on anything other than my kid likes Bayley,
right?
And so the person next to them, who's the hardcore, who has, you know, the Smart Mark T-shirt or
every background information,
and by the way, I'm guilty of probably being too smart for my own good. And this person who's sitting next to them is just like looking down and is like, "Why do you like Bayley? Bayley has this flaw, and Bayley isn't this, and Bayley isn't that, and Bayley's this," and the parents of the 7-year-old is like, "My kid just likes Bayley. Like, cool color scheme, hugs people. Like, what's not to like?
Right.
And so maybe that hardcore fan has just alienated the first time fan into having a bad experience at a WWE show. And they're like, well, we're not doing this again because of cost. And I got to sit next to the a-hole who knows everything.
Yep.
So I don't think that the idea to give the general public these quote insider smarty terms, like, I don't think that does anything good for business. But if you're going to tell me that Fox is going to do this digital blast to be like, this is Roman Reigns and this is his backstory and this is Charlotte Flair and this is her backstory, this is Seth Rollins, this is his backstory, like, that's the good stuff. But if you're going to be like, vocabulary word Mark, super hardcore fan, like, that doesn't do anything for anybody.
Well, you're right. And like, you have to
have
know
them
who
watch
they
the movie from the 70s called Carney or whatever it is, because that's where all this talk comes from.
Right, right. And maybe they'll turn it down a little more. The only thing I'm just thinking here, you know, to go a little more into detail, is they're trying to engage a new audience. And the fact that it's going to be on Friday nights, you're going to have a younger audience, okay? So you want to, you know, work with them and kind of get them on the same page. And like you did the whole thing with Lex Luger, like, them telling you who's a good guy, who to root for. That's what they're going to try to tell you, that Roman Reigns is the guy you want to root for. They may say something bad about Brock Lesnar. He's evil, or I know he's not going to be on SmackDown, but he's evil and he cheats or something like that. Along those lines, they'll make you hate him. So something to the definition of the character, how they want the fans to perceive it, especially a new audience. And anybody, from what Jimmy just said there, going to a live event, if you have a kid and a parent next to you that are enjoying Bayley in the ring with the color scheme and so forth, let the kid enjoy it, okay? Just sit there and shut your mouth and take it all in. Take it in from the eyes of them. Keep your comments to yourself. That's my PSA for the week.
And I think what Fox should do, and what will upset the hardcore fan base, is they're going to educate everybody on everybody. So you're going to get a lot of simplification.
Yeah,
I think they are. I think they're going to run a pilot show in September, much like they did. And then October, it'll be full bore.
But they have to do that, though.
They have to do that. They have to. 100%.
You have to do that. Yeah, it's like, you know, NFL. You have, okay, maybe four preseason games are a lot, but you need a preseason to be tuned up for the regular season. So they got to do that stuff. They got to get the kinks out so then they're ready to go once we cut the tape here to say, okay, start time, here we go, boom. You can't just go into a cold, so they have to do this.
100%.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The other interesting note that Meltzer said on his podcast was NXT is likely going to be Wednesday night on FS1.
Saw that. That's very
Wednesday night, FS1. I wonder why they're going to do Wednesday night on FS1. I wonder why. Oh, that's right, because AEW is going to run TNT on Wednesday night, because they just have to make you pick.
You don't.
They just
think,
have to do it. They can't. They can't sit back and keep NXT on the network so that I can watch it on Thursday morning and watch AEW live, because that's what I would like to do. They can't do that. They have to put Evolve show against Fight for the Fallen. They have to do that. They have to put NXT UK against AEW's pay-per-view. They have to do that. They can't sit back and let anybody else have a chance to be successful. They have to buy the world. They can't let somebody who hasn't drawn a friggin' dime, they have to give them double their pay and a longer term contract because, oh, they can't go to this promotion because they might do something stupid. Can't. But you know what? They have enough money to buy the world, so I guess they're right.
Yep. Can't sit back.
They being WWE, just to be clear.
True. Yep. Pronouns, pal. Thank you. You know, and I see it. I understand why. But you know what? From what I'm hearing on that, it shows that WWE is scared. You know, they don't want to deal with any repercussion down the line. They want to control the audience, say, we're the top dog here. So they need to have that all out there. So good for them to control that stuff. But to let the little guy have a little shot at it here, just absolutely burying any opportunity for them to maybe even take 100% control, because you know you're still going to have a hardcore audience on NXT. And, you know, you'll have your fans for AEW too, which will definitely take time to grow.
Mike, what's your number two takeaway from the last week or so of wrestling?
So, again, continuing with everything, I talked about AEW, talked about Brock Lesnar. I want to go back to WWE here. And for what I'm getting out of everything, Jimmy, is I'm going to call an audible on what I mentioned on discussion earlier, but I think it's Shane McMahon and Kevin Owens. I think we're in a rewind of Stone Cold Steve Austin and Vince McMahon from 1998-99. Obviously, with Kevin Owens doing the stunner now, and then seeing the two guys just go at it on the microphone and set up the rival here. They had the town hall against Kevin Owens on SmackDown. Just, you know, me versus him. It's very similar parallel lines to what we are seeing here once again from the Attitude Era of Austin and Vince, and now with Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon. I think both of them, when they do get in the ring, should be a great match. I am 100% on board for that when it is to happen. But, you know, the fact that they are going back to that, doing more parallel stuff, that might be a sign of the things to come here, especially with Eric Bischoff and Paul Heyman back in the driver's seat, kind of like this is how we did it during this era. And as we know, they were also in charge during that era with Austin and McMahon for their respective companies.
Well, and I'm happy that it's Shane and Kevin Owens, because I didn't want Shane anywhere near the WWE title.
Yeah.
And I felt like that was a direction, and maybe they still go that way. Mm-hmm. But I felt like for a while that was a direction they were going to go Shane and Kofi, and they still might. But at least it doesn't look like it's SummerSlam, and it looks like it's Kofi and Randy Orton for SummerSlam at this point. But as far as Kevin Owens goes, this is more of the Kevin Steen character that you'll remember from Ring of Honor and PWG, and a little, there's been flashes in his run with NXT and WWE of, oh my God, this is Kevin Steen. They're giving him a live microphone. Let's go.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So this will be the WWE version of Kevin Steen and Kevin Owens. The program with Shane is an important one. They've been programmed together before, and it's a top program because you're programmed with a McMahon.
Right.
The town hall on SmackDown, I felt, was a glorified CJ for Shane McMahon to just make everybody else look like geeks.
Sure.
Didn't love that.
No.
It
was a filler. You
know, Roman didn't look like a geek for obvious reasons. Charlotte didn't look like a geek. Buddy Murphy didn't really look like a geek, but, you know, poor Liv Morgan, who I love.
Yeah.
And she's getting, it looks like she's getting a new makeover for her character soon, which I hope they do something with Liv, because Liv's got a ton of personality and spunk, but I don't want to get too sidetracked on that.
Oh, that's
as
true.
Far as Shane goes, keep him out of the title picture and keep that thing on Kofi for a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Because, and this is going to transition to my next point, Kofi Kingston has had a really good run as WWE champion.
He has.
But he hasn't had that definitive championship defense. And I think WWE has done a really good job as far as protecting him as the WWE champion, something that they should do more of.
Right.
He's had good opponents in Dolph and Kevin Owens and Samoa Joe, but he hasn't had that defining, amazing match like he did when he won the championship from Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania.
Right.
But we need to keep in mind that the Kofi Championship run is proof that WWE can do good stuff. They can do good booking when they invest in it, and they've invested in Kofi. Yep. It looks like his SummerSlam opponent is going to be Randy Orton, which we've talked about in detail about how I've misread his career and how he's much better than I gave him credit for.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe Kofi versus Randy Orton at SummerSlam is going to be that breakout match. I hope it is.
Yeah, no, and you know what? I was thinking about that the other day too, because we saw Randy Orton get so much. I thought he had a really good battle royal there on Raw. They did tease the revenge there with him and Brock Lesnar, and he had a really. I think Randy Orton's had himself a pretty good week, and you know, it made me think about that show we did about a month and a half ago, whatever, on him. And yeah, it's like he is really pretty darn good. And Jim Ross even talked about him. I think it was last week or a couple of weeks ago on his podcast, just praising him, how consistent he's been. And he's had, when he's in the ring to, you know, be up to the task to put on a good match, he's always going to give you his all, and he will do that. And I think that's a good thing for him and Kofi Kingston there for a WWE championship. Yes, he did pin Kofi on SmackDown this week. Obviously non-title, but I think that may tease something right there that he pinned him and he can, you know,
shoot right up to that number one contender spot. And just an observation, like the pop he got when he came out, Worcester crowd did him well. The pop he got when he came out for Money in the Bank back a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Randy Orton's a star.
Yeah.
And he's a star to a lot of people. I took him for granted. That's on me.
Yeah, he's a draw.
Should Randy Orton be WWE champion and should he be the one to beat Kofi Kingston? I don't think so. But give Orton versus Kingston a chance to be a championship level match, a great match at SummerSlam, and I think we'll be doing something good. And this kind of, as we're discussing this, New Day, they're the tag team champions, they're the WWE champion, and I think to a degree they might have been testing the waters on Big E a little bit as a future contender down the road.
Absolutely.
So is New Day the best three-man group in WWE history?
I mean, you're going to have the traditional, say, the Freebirds, but or Demolition, you could go with that too.
So Demolition as a trio was only for a summer.
Okay, good point. I'd have to say, I can't think of anything else really for that matter, because you know, one night you could have Kofi and Big E Langston. The next night you could have Xavier Woods and Kofi and or whatever. So it works. They've drawn. They're a crowd attraction. Kids love them. They're great on the microphone. They're great in the ring. I have a hard time arguing that, too.
They essentially came from a gimmick that wasn't at all over.
Yep.
They worked it. They became the longest reigning tag team champions in the company's history.
Mm-hmm.
Kofi's the WWE champion. They've had six runs, and there's been no interruption in the group.
None.
The counter argument, I would say, well, Evolution, they had interruptions in the group. I would tell you the Shield, they had interruptions in the group.
So I think the Shield, okay, I may be in the minority here, but I think they're an overrated faction. I really do. I like them.
Continue.
I never got invested. Maybe it was because of, they were young. They weren't established yet. And not saying that New Day was 100% established, but you know, we knew about Kofi Kingston. We knew about Big E Langston. They did have some, you know, individual careers. These guys came right out of NXT, in the AAA developments, more or less, the Shield. So I wasn't 100% invested in them as others. And again, I'm probably in the minority there. I always thought they were a little overrated for what they got for recognition. Not taking anything away from them, but I thought they were overrated.
So I don't think that they were overrated. Their individual resumes are great, but they had some splits in there. They had some breakups. And one thing also is we've all been kind of waiting for the dissension in New Day.
Yeah.
And it hasn't happened yet.
No. But it's probably hard to break them up.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. So that if they ever do it, and there's been no hint that they're going to do it. But if they do it, it'll come out of nowhere, much in the same way that Seth Rollins turning on the Shield kind of came out of nowhere, even though we anticipated that it was going to be Ambrose who was going to do it, and it wasn't.
Right. And just to go back on your question, Jimmy, on the best trios, we're counting, this is strictly WWE, right?
Well, it's more of a wrestling thing, but it's also, it's specifically three-man groups.
All right, I was going to say,
like, if you give me the Four Horsemen,
well,
that doesn't work.
NWO.
The NWO was more than was multiples. I mean, if you want to say the original three, but they didn't last very long as just an original three.
No, they didn't. So, I don't know. That's the only one. But you're right. The New Day, what are we looking at? 5 years now? Coming up in 4 years for all three of them together?
Yeah. They've checked all the boxes. Crowd loves them. They sell merchandise. Yep. They draw TV ratings. Check all the boxes.
Yeah, without question.
Mike,
and they've outlasted the Shield.
Yep. Mike, third takeaway for you.
All right, yeah. So, Jimmy, both you and I were at the Evolve 132 show on Sunday in Melrose, Massachusetts. Shout out to our friend Scott Isaacs, who also came. He had a great time. And I was really impressed with what kind of show this was. And I'd never been to an Evolve show. That was also your first Evolve show too, right?
It was. Realistically, the first time I watched their show was on Saturday night.
Yep.
And then the first live event I had ever been to was on Sunday night. And I enjoyed it too. Austin Theory, Josh Briggs, Orange Cassidy, Matt Riddle, Kurt Stallion. Just great talent. I enjoyed the pacing of the show.
Yes.
And this Josh Briggs kid, he has the look and the movement to be like the next big star in pro wrestling. I was really impressed. And I talked to him a little bit before the show, and he seems to have his head in the right place. He seems to know about presentation, all that stuff. And I felt the same way with Austin Theory, who is the Evolve champion. And Gabe Sapolsky told me he's going to be the next John Cena. And at 21, he's got the potential to be, he's got the look to be, but we'll see on whether that pans out or not. But there's a lot of good young talent out there, and Theory and Briggs are about to tell a story that I think is going to be a really good one for Evolve.
Absolutely. And I thought the match of the night was the second to last one, JD Drake and AR Fox. Just had me invested the whole time on the edge of my seat. You know, I know that there was the rematch there. Well, not the rematch, but JD Drake was in the Evolve title match at Evolve 131 the night before. But again, this guy, big guy, and holy cow, he can still move. But AR Fox, my God, one of the best in-ring performers I've seen. And I posted a video on my Instagram at Sarge95. Check it out there. Him doing a flip in the backflip on Drake in the air. JD Drake, right, who was right on the canvas. It was awesome. Great match. It was probably about, I don't know, 15 minutes, but I think everybody was into that one because it was shortly after the intermission. And sure, the main event was Matt Riddle against Kurt Stallion, so obviously that was a big draw, but everybody, I think that the wind was taken out of the sails because of AR Fox and JD Drake. A great match. Match of the night in my book right there for Evolve 132.
I like the fact that Riddle did the jackhammer.
Riddle was great, and we had some interaction with him too, and I was really glad to meet him. Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa, just two good guys. I thought it was great, a good show that they put on there. And the smaller venues too, Jimmy, you know,
the crowds know everything.
Yeah,
they're into everything. They're enthusiastic to be there.
I had a little kid sitting in front of me, and he was giving fist pumps to Matt Riddle and Orange Cassidy and Josh Briggs, and he was over the moon because it's essentially a house show, more or less, but you're just so into it, and they're great to the fans here because these guys are up-and-coming stars. And I really enjoyed Evolve. Great product. If you've never been to an Evolve show, go check it out.
And I just want to close quickly on the New Japan G1 tournament and specifically want to single out two matches.
Go for it.
Zack Sabre Jr. against Okada. I've kind of skimmed the career of Zack Sabre Jr., and I really wanted to see him in a big matchup against Okada. And this was about as good a showing as I've seen from any mat wrestler. If Zack Sabre Jr. isn't the best grappler or the best mat wrestler in the world, it's Daniel Bryan, and those are your 1-2, and it's not even close. But this match with Okada basically was Zack Sabre Jr. aggressively twisting Okada into pretzels at different points, getting very good near falls and submissions on Okada. And there were different points where I'm like, Okada might tap or get pinned. At one point, Zack Sabre Jr. had three different variations of submission holds on Okada at the same time.
Nice.
And his transitions, if you're a WWE fan specifically, are on par with the Samoa Joe transitions through holds.
Nice.
Zack Sabre Jr. is a thinner version of a thin technical grappler, and he's so good. He's just so good. I thought he was going to beat Okada. Okada ended up winning, but there was a few moments there where I'm like, is Okada going to lose here?
Yeah. And these guys have had some good shows together. You know, this is not the first time they've been in the ring together. So, you know, they know how to work with each other, which is awesome. But Okada did pull it off, though.
He did pull off the win. The other one I wanted to mention was John Moxley versus Jeff Cobb. Moxley, who's been doing kind of the brawling death matches, did a lot of mat work early on with Jeff Cobb. And the reason why this kind of stood out to me was Moxley's a brawler. He wants to do that aggressive Cactus Jack style, for lack of a better way of putting it. And it reminded me of when WWE did Dean Ambrose versus Triple H before WrestleMania in Dallas. And the hardcore fan seemed to have their eyes opened up when Dean Ambrose could get this work a wrestling match.
Right.
And this might have been another moment where John Moxley, we know he can do it, and I love the fact that he wears wrestling shoes.
Yeah.
But this was one of those moments where it's like, oh, John Moxley's not just doing death matches. He's actually doing worked matches with psychology and this, that, and the other thing. And there was a little bit of stuff outside the ring, but not a lot of major stuff. Mm-hmm. But the detail on the finish was very good. Moxley couldn't get Cobb up because Cobb is, of course, a bigger, larger athlete. So he couldn't get the height he wanted for his finish, the Death Rider DDT. So the finish actually came when Moxley used the ropes as a leverage point to get the angle that he wanted on his finish.
Nice.
And it's a little detail that I felt like I needed to point out because it's the good stuff. It's really the good stuff is when you're altering your finish because your opponent is a larger size than you can actually execute the move on. Because too many times, like, I love the fact that on a Nitro in Worcester years ago, that Kurt Hennig did a perfect plex on Big Show.
Oh, wow. That's like nearly impossible.
And it's a cool move and it looks great, but realistically, is somebody half the size of Big Show really going to do that?
Yeah.
So I just like the fact that Jon Moxley had to alter his move so that he could actually make it effective.
It's great to see the future winner of the G1 right there, Jon Moxley, baby.
But I'll tell you what, this New Japan tournament is really good. It's really good. And it's worth your time and investment. If you're frustrated with the week-to-week WWE product, you should go watch that. And again, like Extreme Rules, good pay-per-view. Not great. Not going to get into details as we wrap up the show here, but it was a good show. The New Japan stuff, if you like in-ring stuff, that's for you. AEW had a good show. You know, they'll have a great show, I think, in Chicago at the end of August or the 1st of September, whatever the date is. I think it's
Labor Day weekend.
30th or 31st, whatever that month has. So, Mike, any closing thoughts?
Yeah, Labor Day weekend there for AEW. Be sure to check out Jimmy's exclusive interviews. He had Brian Malonis on, New England favorite, and of course Matt Taven too, Ring of Honor champion, who also threw out the first pitch this week at Fenway Park before a Red Sox game. Have not heard the entirety of both interviews. I've had a crazy week personally, so I'm going to get caught up on that over the next couple of days with Matt and Brian, two of my favorite guys, two good dudes, and be sure to check that out, part of Jimmy's summer series of interviews with some local talent. So good stuff, Jimmy.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
And Ring of Honor Sunday, Lowell.
Ring of Honor Sunday in Lowell, Massachusetts. They have good seats still available. And recently added, I saw this today on the old social media.
Yeah.
Throw Ride.
All right.
Throw Ride is going to be at the Ring of Honor show in Lowell on Sunday.
Good for him.
I agree. Good for him.
Yep.
Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 98.5thesportshub.com and on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. For Mike Riley at Sarge985, the show's Twitter account is at WrestleCast985. You can follow me on Twitter at IamJamesStewart. Hopefully, I will see many of our listeners this Sunday night in Lowell, Massachusetts for the Ring of Honor show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.